It's Tuesday, October the 6th, and you're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. Before we start, a quick reminder again that if you like what we do with this podcast and you want to get unfettered, unmetered access to the cornucopia of quality journalism published every week by the Irish Times, all you need to do is go to irishtimes.com/inside, and that's where you can sign up for unlimited access. Using that particular address allows us to know how many of you, our listeners, have been persuaded to make that particular excellent decision, which is good for the podcast. And if you're in the habit of listening to podcasts, you may be particularly interested in our current offer of a free pair of Sennheiser wireless headphones if you purchase either a premium, a weekend, or a complete subscription. All the information about that is at irishtimes.com/inside. Now, our political editor, Pat Leahy, is here. And Pat, you only join us on a Tuesday when there's something really meaty to discuss, and that is certainly the case this week. I think when we look back on the history of the coronavirus pandemic in Ireland, it's very likely this week will be seen as a really significant landmark. Maybe first, you can just take us briefly through what has happened over the last 48 hours.
Sure, Hugh. Yeah, well, I mean, people will probably remember on Sunday night when texts and WhatsApps and news alerts and such jiggery-pokery started to light up their phones, telling them that there was a recommendation from NPHET to go to immediately to level 5. Jargon Buster, NPHET is the group of the National Public Health Emergency Team, as listeners of the podcast will, I'm sure, be aware, which is a large group of civil servants and doctors which advises government on public health issues. So NPHET had a meeting on Sunday. They previously met on the Thursday and decided not to issue any fresh advice to the government to upgrade the alert stage or the level of restrictions at which the country was at. Most of the country, apart from Dublin and Donegal, being on level 2, which is a, you know, relatively mild level of restrictions. Donegal and Dublin being on level 3, more strict, but still allowing for retail, etc., and for much commercial and social activity to continue to take place, albeit within certain confines. So NPHET on Sunday radically changed their stance. They had a meeting. They wrote to the Minister for Health, which is the form that the advice normally takes, and they recommended that the entire country should immediately go to level 5, which is the highest level of restrictions, and would basically accord with the 3-month lockdown that we experienced in the spring and early summer of this year, with the important exception that schools and creches would remain open. But other than that, they were recommending basically a return to lockdown, all except essential retail closed, all except essential workers to work from home, capacity of public transport to be drastically reduced, people to be told to stay within 2 kilometres of their home, and so forth. Nobody will need that rehearsed for them. I suppose we all remember well what it was like once that lockdown was introduced in March of this year. So it's an extremely dramatic move by NPHET on Sunday night.
Pat, before you go on, can I just ask you, do we have any sense of what changed between Thursday and Sunday for that advice to change so dramatically?
Well, I suppose this is one of the things that caused such concern subsequently in government, and I guess we'll come on to talk about that. But that while the numbers had been going up, and people will have seen the daily tally of new cases, of admissions to hospital, admissions to ICU, though both of those indicators, and again, we'll perhaps talk about that in a little bit, were significantly lower than they had been previously in the first wave of the virus. But for many people looking in, and for people in government, there didn't seem to be the sort of drastic explosion in numbers between Thursday and Sunday that would justify an immediate move to such a stringent lockdown. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, though, I think, in the narrative, because from the point of view of the government, what happened on Sunday is that this thing was landed upon them in much the same way on a Sunday evening as it was landed on the rest of the country. I spoke to a number of ministers who learned from the media that NPHET was asking them to go to a level 5 lockdown immediately. So what happened then on Monday is, I suppose, it was a series of meetings. The senior NPHET officials met with a group of senior officials chaired by Martin Fraser and including a number of other secretaries general from relevant government departments. There was then a meeting with a lengthy meeting, I'm given to understand, between the leaders of the three government parties, Taoiseach Tánaiste, Green Party leader Eamon Ryan, Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath and senior officials to discuss the NPHET recommendations. There was then a meeting of the cabinet which took place later. And the upshot of those, to cut a long story semi-short, is that the government decided that it would not adopt the NPHET recommendations. And this, I think, going back to the initial point that you made, is quite a significant departure, because people will remember back in the early phase of the pandemic when ministers were coming out, particularly the then Health Minister Simon Harris, was coming out and saying things like, look, politicians are not going to be making these decisions. Public health experts will be making these decisions, and we will follow their advice as we go into lockdown and as we design the shape of the lockdown that we believe is required to suppress the virus and the spread of the virus. So for the first time, really, we have NPHET making a set of recommendations and government deciding very publicly that it will not follow those recommendations. Two further points, I think, relevant to make at this point, Hugh. The first is that you can't ignore the change in the leadership of NPHET that took place between, you asked me what changed between Thursday and Sunday. One of the things that changed at NPHET was that Dr. Tony Houlihan, who is the chief medical officer and the most important person, I suppose, on NPHET, who was very much the face of the public health advice that led to the lockdown before the summer. He has been absent on family leave since early July. He was due to return to his office on Monday. He arrived back a day early on Sunday. He summoned a meeting of the NPHET group, and he drove through the requirement for the lockdown. And what many people in government saw in that was Tony Houlihan, and this is their interpretation, I stress, not mine, but that Tony Houlihan was returning. He wanted to grab the reins again. It was essentially, a number of people in government said to me, a sort of a power grab by Tony Houlihan. That's not to do him a disservice, but merely to explain how it was interpreted in government. And it became very much yesterday, I think, a story of ministers pushing back, ministers up to including the Taoiseach, pushing back against Tony Houlihan himself in these series of meetings that took place in government buildings. The second point, I think, to make is just to explain the government's rationale on it. And this was done privately, I suppose, throughout yesterday to us. But last night it was very clear and very explicit as the government's rationale for declining to follow the advice. And that was that an immediate lockdown was not warranted by the public health situation, and would, more importantly, would destroy hundreds of thousands of jobs in an economy that is beginning to get to its feet, or parts of which are beginning to get to its feet after the lockdown. And you know, if you look at what Micheál Martin said last night, what Stephen Donnelly said in the subsequent press conference late last night in government buildings, that their view, they take now perhaps a broader view than ministers were taking in the early part of the lockdown, when they're saying, yes, we have to listen to the public health advice, but we have to also take on board the various other imperatives and dynamics that are at work in society. And it was primarily, I think, on the primarily due to the economic rationale that that the government chose to, let's not forget, chose to up the level of restrictions from level 2 to level 3, but not to go any further.
There's an awful lot inside that. Let me ask you one question, first of all. I mean, while Tony Holland was away on personal compassionate leave, the government did do a number of things. It brought in the system of 5 levels, which we're discussing here. It also put in place a structure, a sort of an intermediate structure, between the advice that comes from NPHET and the decisions to be taken on the basis of that advice from the government. And all of that seemed to be an attempt, it remains to be seen how successful it is, an attempt to sort of regularise the situation, to put in place a system of dealing with ramping up or indeed relaxing restrictions at some point, and also of taking on board medical advice, but not, as you were saying happened earlier this year, not taking it carte blanche, taking on board other issues, economic issues, people's psychological well-being, and all the other questions which arise.
Yeah, so this group of senior officials, the senior officials oversight group or whatever it's called, that seems to have been bypassed on Sunday night when the letter went from NPHET, from Tony Holohan to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. And the idea of the senior officials group was, as you've outlined it, not just to advise government on the practicalities and of implementing NPHET advice, but also, I think, to provide, in effect, a sort of political buffer between NPHET and the government. Because what the government didn't want to find itself doing is considering medical, considering the public health advice coming fresh from NPHET. It wanted a stage between that where the measures required to achieve what NPHET wanted would be considered by senior officials. Chaired by Martin Fraser, the Secretary General of the Department of the Taoiseach, and an immensely, certainly the most powerful civil servant in the country, and immensely powerful across government, but also attended by, you know, people like the Secretary General of the Department of Justice, Department of Health, obviously, and any other departments that might be relevant to the application of whatever NPHET was seeking. And this is one of the sources, I think, of the annoyance in and around government. And it would be difficult, I think, judging on many of the conversations I had yesterday, it would be difficult to overstate the annoyance at Dr. Tony Holohan within government over the action that was taken on Sunday night. But I think that part of that was due to the circumventing of that new structure that had been put in specifically to avoid what happened the other night.
Now, I've been listening to various government ministers and spokespeople over the last 24 hours or so, and they've been making the point quite correctly that they're moving to the level 3 nationwide at midnight tonight, but it's completely open to them. The whole idea of having this system of levels is an ability to react quickly and, if necessary, to ramp it up to 4 or even to 5, depending on how the numbers develop over the next week or 2 weeks. However, the memo, which was sent to the government on Sunday night, precisely said that that was an approach which would not work in terms of really addressing the numbers and turning around the almost exponential growth we're seeing at the moment. I suppose the bottom line is, over the next 4 or 5 weeks, we're going to find out who's right.
Yeah, I guess we will find out who's right, you know. And there is a political danger for the government here that, you know, Stephen Donnelly said, he said last night at the press conference, you know, this isn't about who's right and who's wrong. I think it might become about who's right and who's wrong. You know, if numbers continue to climb in the coming weeks, and more significantly, admissions to ICU, if those numbers increase significantly, then I think people will legitimately ask if the government got this right last night. This is a very significant decision, not just in its practical application for the country, but I think in its potential political ramifications for the government. Now, of course, it's harder to see a situation where people look back and they give government credit for avoiding bad things that that didn't happen. But I suppose that's probably a challenge for us to kind of explain and analyze things as best as we can as the events take shape. But certainly there is, I think, there is a political danger for the government in taking this course of action. One of the things that I'm curious about, I think it's a point worth raising, and I didn't really get a satisfactory answer to it from a number of people that I asked about it yesterday, both on the health side and on the political side, is it's quite clear when you look at the numbers of infections at the moment, the graph of the number of infections plotted against the number of admissions to hospital and admissions to intensive care units, that the virus seems to be, at this point, a lot less dangerous to the people it's infecting than it was in the early part of the first wave. So when we were looking at at the number of infections in March and April, the number of admissions to hospital and the number of admissions then on into ICU was increasing at a proportionate rate. That doesn't appear to be the case right now. The question is whether that is because this second wave is different and will remain different, or whether it's simply a lag in it's a lag effect, and that in a few weeks we will see those hospital infections spike again and those ICU numbers spike again. Because remember, what drove the early lockdown during the first wave, and what the public health experts, including Tony Holohan, are warning about in this second wave, is the danger of the health system being completely overrun by the sort of numbers of infections and the number of people that infected with the virus that require hospital care and, in due course, ICU care. So I think that is probably the most probably the most important question of the coming weeks, not just the numbers of infections, but how serious the experience of the disease is turning out to be for people that are infected.
And we should note there that the reality is, I mean, we look across Europe and indeed further afield, where many, many countries are experiencing similar second surges or second spikes or whatever you want to call them. They're all seeing some form or other of that. But nobody really knows why it is. Some people think it's because actually there were far more people getting infected back in March, but they weren't being tested, so the testing to hospitalization ratio was different. Other people have different theories about it. But the bottom line, you're quite right, the bottom line is how many people are occupying hospital beds and how many people are in intensive care.
Yeah, and it is, I suppose, noteworthy that the HSE chief, Paul Reid, came out yesterday morning, even as the political response to this was just beginning to take shape, and Paul Reid basically said that the HSE is not in danger of being being overrun. Hospitals are not being in danger of being overrun. ICUs are not at this point in danger of running out of capacity. And you know, listeners will probably recall that in the early part of the pandemic, that you know, that there was surge capacity put in place with private hospitals that that turned out not to be needed. And you've got to assume that if ICU numbers start to ramp up again, that it would be possible to put that surge capacity in place. I certainly know that people in the Department of Health were saying yesterday that there had been a great deal of training of ICU personnel had been done over the summer. And while the government has been justly criticised, I think, for its failure to use the lull over the summer to tool up certain parts of the health service in anticipation of a second wave, there has been something like 1,500 ICU personnel have been trained up to be able to operate those facilities should they become necessary. But again, the HSE is saying yesterday that it doesn't see this being necessary in the coming weeks. But to a certain extent, a lot of this seems to me, anyway, as a layperson, to be informed guesswork. There isn't a map of how this virus operates for either public health experts or clinicians to make very accurate predictions or to make very confident predictions, I think, about what it looks like within a couple of months. I suppose people on the public health side are saying, because of that, we need to operate the precautionary principle and to move to the highest level of restrictions now, because as their advice suggested to the government, if we don't do it now, we will be doing it, but for mitigation in a couple of weeks. The other view is taken by government that seeing as we can't say for sure that we're good, that our hospitals are in danger of being overwhelmed, seeing as we have no indications that that is what is going to happen at the moment, then it would be irresponsible for us to destroy chunks of the economy by going into a lockdown now. But I guess you pay your money, you take your choices.
Pat, what do you make of the politics of the presentation by the government of that particular case last night? That in one location, you had Micheál Martin first addressing the nation and then giving a press conference about government policy, speaking in kind of fairly moderate tones, I think it's fair to say. And on the other hand, you had Leo Varadkar live on television on Claire Byrne Live, being pretty caustic about Tony Holohan, who's a public servant, and that's not the sort of generally the tradition in political circles in Ireland to do that.
You can say that again. I think, the contrast will have struck many people last night. It was certainly, we say the word unprecedented a lot in coverage of politics, particularly in times such as these. But this was genuinely unprecedented. I can't think of another occasion in which a senior public servant was spoken about in that manner as Leo Varadkar did of Dr. Tony Holohan last night. What I can also say, though, is that I've never seen the level of anger directed privately in private conversations all day yesterday and on Sunday night from politicians and the people who work for politicians as I saw yesterday directed at NPHET in general, but I think Tony Holohan in particular. Again, look, that maybe harsh or unfair on Dr. Tony Holohan, who I'm sure is a public servant trying to do his best, but the view of many people in government. In fact, I didn't find anyone in government who didn't hold this view to a greater or lesser extent, was that Tony Holohan had come back, had tried to bounce the government into a premature lockdown, that this was a power play by Tony Holohan, and they reacted, with a fury in private that was matched by Leo Varadkar's by Leo Varadkar's comments last night.
Does Tony Holohan, as a public servant, have the ability to come back and defend his reputation and position?
Well, from what I've seen of him, and like the rest of the country, I suppose I know him by observing him in the early part of the lockdown. He seems to be somebody who is more than willing to fight his corner. I don't think he'll be pushed around by anyone. There was some chatter around government, various parts of government today, wondering could he possibly resign. I'd be surprised about that. He doesn't strike me as the resigning type. He undoubtedly thinks that he is correct and that it is imperative in the cause of public health that his advice is followed. So my guess is that he will continue to give this advice, perhaps in less in a less public manner to government over the next few weeks. I suppose if that advice continued to be ignored by government, then he, you know, might have questions to ask himself at that stage. But look, Hugh, this is all completely in the realms of speculation on my part. But
I mean, there's no cliche, doctors differ and patients die. I don't think it's applicable. Hopefully it's not applicable anyway in this circumstance. But there has been a lot of hand-wringing over the last day or so about this very, very public fight and disagreement between the people who are at the core of making these decisions. I don't mind the idea that people would have profound disagreements and would go to the mat about them. These are big questions that are going to affect the country and people's lives in all kinds of ways. And not all doctors agree on these issues. Not all scientists agree on them. It's okay to have a fight about them.
I think that's perfectly true, frankly. I don't disagree with that. Where I do see a difficulty, though, is when these fights are played out in such public view that it can undermine the message that is subsequently agreed by government to come out of that process. So if the, you know, if the government is, you know, seeking public buy-in to the measures that it is promulgating, then I think that probably is not helped when there's such obvious disagreement behind the scenes. And that, you know, I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't know about these sort of things. I'm a journalist. I think that we should know as much as possible about how we are governed, because ultimately I think that'll make us better governed. But I can see the argument that says these disputes at times such as this shouldn't really be fought out in the full bright glare of publicity.
One very last thought. I'm just wondering, is there any discussion in political circles of the question of what happens if people don't obey these regulations? There's a lot of talk about the different E's, you know, engage and educate. And the last E is enforce. The Gardaí haven't been given additional powers. Indeed, I don't think they're looking for them to enforce some of these regulations. But I mean, we've all heard and seen anecdotal evidence of people clearly breaching the current regulations in Dublin and Donegal at level 3. At some point, does the stick need to replace the carrot?
Yeah, I think that was one of the messages kind of coming out of government last night and has been reinforced today, that there will be a higher degree of enforcement. And, you know, just because the guards aren't getting any new powers doesn't mean that the level of enforcement cannot be significantly intensified. You know, in the early part of the lockdown, we were seeing a lot more checkpoints. We were seeing guards, you know, going in and out of pubs at the time and restaurants at the time that they were open, and that seems to me to have fallen off significantly. And you know, of course, you know, the great argument, of course, is about, well, the guards don't have the right under the health regulations to go in and break up a party. At the same time, I think in the vast majority of cases, if you're having a house party that is forbidden under the guidelines and a guard knocks on the window, it would be someone who is either, you know, very brave, very foolhardy, very drunk, or very constitutionally aware, who would refuse the guard's instructions to tell everyone to get the hell out of the party and go home. So I think, to be honest, that is more a question of will and capacity within the guards. And there was it was announced last night that more money would be made for Garda overtime, which certainly often seems to be the sort of magic ingredient in these things. But I think just because the Gardaí not being afforded any additional powers doesn't at all mean that there cannot be stricter enforcement of the regulations.
Right, so we will leave it there. Thanks to our producer, Declan Conlon, as always. And if you want to get in touch, just email us at politicspodcast@irishtimes.com. We'll be back in your feed very soon. But until then, thanks very much indeed for listening.